civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, everybody in Tribe World, and I hope you're doing well as we continue on in these uncertain and troubled and certainly challenging times. I'm delighted to be joined today by a tremendous young man who best known and loved by you all as Slade. Join me in welcoming Matt. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Ray. Hi there. Hey, great to be talking to you. How you doing? And so lovely to be able to connect to everybody out there. So thank you so much, first of all, for having me on. It's a real pleasure and privilege.
Well, it's lovely to hear your voice. And as some of the listeners will know, if they've listened to some of the other podcasts, I'm stranded in Australia. And Matt, you're in London, or what part of England are you in right now?
Yeah, so I'm in Reading, so just about half an hour outside of London, just to the west. Just sat at the moment, very lucky to be able to have access to a garden. Just sat in the garden. It's early morning here, nice blue sky, sunny day. That's where me and the family are right now, in lockdown, as with the rest of the world.
How are you coping with it, Matt? Because you've got a 2-year-old here since
yeah.
You got married, and you've got your father of 3 lovely children, and
yeah.
And the young one, the they say the terrible 2s, but I mean that's a handful. I mean, at the best of times. But if you're kind of locked into a house, I mean, how are you getting on? What do you do in the day?
Yeah, well, it's definitely, I mean, I've always had a lot of respect for teachers, but my respect for them now has just gone through the roof, because, yeah. You know, when you attempt to do a little bit of homeschooling of my 7-year-old daughter and look after the 2-year-old, you just realize, wow, all teachers deserve medals.
Education is the greatest legacy, it really is. Yeah. And I've not missed, I mean, I think it's again interesting in this day and age with the care workers, and it throws everything on its head, really, where you suddenly realize, you know, even people that are working in the grocery shops and keeping services open, and the care workers and the teachers, certainly, that you realize that, you know, how valuable their services are, really. And
absolutely, Ray. And they're, you know, it's all of those, you know, incredible people on the front line that are keeping, you know, selflessly keeping the world turning right now. From all those teachers to, you know, the supermarket cashier to the postman, to the delivery drivers. Some incredible people there that are keeping it all turning around. But our job, you know, all I have to do, my family, is just, you know, stay at home. So, it definitely has some challenges with it. But I think the key thing we've just been trying to remind ourselves is that to be kind, you know, to be kind to each other as a family. And while we are in lockdown, and also to kind of know that on those days when you feel a bit frustrated, or you feel a little bit anxious, that it's completely okay to not be okay in these circumstances, and to just, again, with that, be kind to ourselves and recognize that these are extraordinary, unprecedented times. And with that, you know, every single person is just trying to do the best they can. You know, being gentle, I think, with ourselves is the key, and having the compassion for ourselves that we often have for other people, you know.
So I think that's good advice, Matt. And just before we started recording, I was mentioning to Matt, we get a lot of emails and messages from within our tribal brothers and sisters around the world, the tribe fandom, that some are coping very well and others struggling. And we're always saying, it's as you rightly say, Matt, it's not a sign of weakness to reach out and say, I'm hurting, I'm struggling, I'm feeling down, whatever. But it is, we'll get through it. And it's,
yeah, it, Absolutely, Ray. There's a broadcaster that I'm a huge fan of, Mark Commode, and he does film reviews and criticism, and he has a podcast, and he has a saying on there, which is, he said, everything will be all right in the end, and if it's not all right, it's not the end. And
nice saying. It's lovely.
Yeah, I just find real comfort from that. Yes. And I think that's the thing, knowing that actually to be vulnerable and to be able to reach out and talk to family members or use the technology now, you know, that we have, be it Zoom or Skype or WhatsApp or FaceTime, just to, you know, connect with friends and see faces and just know that, you know, actually the world is a huge community at the moment that's all going through this same experience. And I think, yeah.
Business, isn't that it's as you rightly, the word is unprecedented. I mean,
yeah,
not even in times of war, as the, you know, from literally it's hands across the world. I mean, we're all going through this. And Matt, England, you've had the UK, you've had a real rough patch there, haven't you, really? And even with your Prime Minister Boris Johnson being in intensive care, it's frightening. I mean, that makes it even so more. You know, really,
yeah,
just incredible that, and the media and all that stuff. Again, it's are you able to leave that? You're able to leave the house, are you, and get groceries? Obviously, but
So I go, you know, kind of just, you know, once or twice a week to do a food shop, my wife has asthma, so she's kind of under lock and key in the house just to make sure that, you know, she's quite high risk. So I've been going out, you know, to get you know, your bit of food in and stuff like that. But we go out, I think exercise has been really key. You know, just being able to go out and just go for a run every day, just for 30 minutes, you know, just to kind of clear the head and physically keep strong, which kind of mentally helps keep strong. And, you know, very lucky to kind of have a park near us where, you know, you can go for a run. But it's very interesting there. You just naturally see if a runner sees another runner in the distance, or, you know, you're coming up to a couple walking or a family, just everybody's very aware. And there's that moment of quite slight awkwardness. You're just looking to go, how much distance can I keep? But also a recognition, you know, I think everybody just, there's eye contact and people just knowing that, you know, there is still very much a community out there. You know, we might not be able to be as physically close as some people would like, or but those connections are still out there and still happening.
And Matt, I mean, I don't know if it's, as people know from some of my biographies or whatever it is, but I'm like that character in As Good As It Gets, you know. I mean, before this all started, I'm a germaphobe. I mean, it's just a hypochondriac, and, you know, somebody, I dive and, you know, just, so, and I'm constantly washing my hands. It's obsessive, and I'm driving everybody here crazy, you know, because, you know, and it's almost like I want an asbestos suit and armor. At least that's enough for me. I want to get some of those, you know, those kind of knights in armor costumes.
Right. So, yeah.
Exactly. And he was a tube coming out that, like, with oxygen or something. It's I put the drawbridge up. I'm going nowhere, you know.
Oh, right. I hear you totally. I mean, you know, when I was in the supermarket, you know, a couple of days ago, you know, I pull up in the car and then I feel as if I'm about to go in and rob it, because, you know, I put on my face mask and then I put on my gloves, and I just feel like I'm getting ready to go and do a heist. And then we were in the, I think, the bread aisle, and, you know, and a guy halfway up the aisle sneezed. And literally the whole aisle, everybody was just, they just stopped for a second, and then trolleys banging into each other as everybody tries to escape. And I think, I don't know, I think if you can, there is a a humor to it as well, you know, and it's just a case of just trying to keep, you know, keep the perspective, keep the common sense, and just acknowledge that, you know, everybody's doing their best, and trying to just, you know, here very much the focus is on supporting the NHS and ensuring that it doesn't reach breaking point. And, you know, all those doctors and nurses, my God, they're just what they are doing on our front line is just, you know, astonishing. And it's great, actually, Ray, this morning, I think just as we started having our chat, there was a retired captain who fought in the Second World War, a guy called Tom Moore. He's 99 years old. And he pledged to walk 100 laps of his garden before he hit 100 years old. And he wanted to raise £1,000 for the National Health Service. And he's ended up today at the finishing line raising £12 million.
Isn't that tremendous? I mean, that's what, well, those type of stories are so inspirational, aren't they? And just... wonderful. And so he would be a veteran of the Second World War,
it's just incredible. And I think it's, you know, you mentioned about the media, and I'm very careful about trying to regulate how much media I access. So, you know, I'll check what's going on in the morning, and then we have a briefing in the UK around 5 o'clock every day as to, you know, next steps and where we're at. And I try and just as much as possible keep it to those two chunks, because otherwise, you know, I'm sure like many people, I have found myself just constantly on my phone, just, you know, watching all the stories roll in. And I think it's absolutely important to be aware, but I just found for me, it was just making me more anxious. And I'm like, actually, this isn't good for me. So I think regulating what you have access to news wise is I found to be a real key, and focusing on those good news stories as well, like, you know, the retired captain, you know, it's like that will keep me going, you know, throughout the day. You know,
that's excellent. And it's a sad indictment to our society, I suppose, where, I mean, it's understandable, news tends to, bad news sells, doesn't it, really? Or it's a sensational
one. Yeah, absolutely. It really does.
And I wish some of the networks, I mean, if I run a network, I'd certainly give the truthful news. I'd have 5 minutes of good news stories, you know, with to have that half empty, half full, where, you know, but and my heart goes out. I mean, as we're speaking now, Matt, there'll be some bereaved people, some people who have had lost their loved ones because of this. Yeah. And it's horrendous for them.
Very much so.
Obviously, there's some people hurting physically as well, losing their jobs, worried about how they pay their mortgage. And so our thoughts are with them as well. But
absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's so, you know, I was saying to my family today, and I'm sure you echo the same sentiments. I mean, we're privileged, really, to have a roof over our head and some food. And to touch wood, to be healthy. And
absolutely, Ray. And I think it's like, you know, just looking at, you know, I'm aware of how lucky I am to just be able to have access as well to a garden. And I know there's so many people that don't. And actually, you know, within this lockdown over here, the weather in the UK has been pretty good, actually, the last few weeks. But, you know, it's those moments of just realizing that counting blessings very much is key. And I don't know, it just seems at the moment that, you know, I mean, looking up in the sky is completely blue. There are no vapor trails because there's no planes, and we're normally on a flight path. You're just very much aware that, you know, I mean, one of the good news stories, obviously, is how the planet is, there is a healing that's going on environmentally, you know, with levels of CO2, levels of nitrogen, levels of, you know, there is that story as well. And I don't know, Ray, you know, maybe once everything is in the rear view, maybe the world will just go back to how it was. But I don't know, maybe there's a sense that will it change, you know, in some ways for the good, you know, maybe travel that isn't essential might drop, you know, planes that don't, people, flights that don't need to be made, maybe people will think a couple of times before doing that, if possible. So I think if some good can come from it, then, you know.
And I think and we've discussed elements of that in the different podcasts, Matt, you know, where, and I think the consensus is it's a time to press pause and to maybe hit the button and for us all to self-reflect and maybe identify what is of true value. And but I have great faith in the human spirit and condition. I really do. And I think we're amazing, as a species, where we can magic. Person talking about your dad and good thing about these chats, it gives your family a chance to know a little bit more about who is Matt Robinson and so Matt, you have siblings?
No, it is only child, just me.
Okay. So and your dad and your mum and did you grow up always wanting, you're a very creative being, and was your dad an influence or your mum on that, or how did all that come about?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ray. I think for me, so my dad he was a banker all of his life, and so very much dad was, you know, 9 to 5, mum, you know, stayed at home and looked after the house and was really active, you know, kind of, you know, had a great social circle and was a really creative spirit. But when I said that I, you know, wanted to go into acting and that was my calling, I think my dad was like, oh my God, okay, but why not do that, but also possibly get another job as well? And and to their credit, actually, when they realized that this was absolutely what I wanted to do and the path I wanted to go down, I think, you know, at the time I probably took it for granted, but they went with it and they supported me fully. And you know, sadly my mum passed away just literally about 2 months before I came out to New Zealand to film Tribe.
I remember that actually, and that was and in fact, you know, it's quite interesting. My wife at the time had been, she had taken a trip to Canada, and she flew back, and she flew from Toronto to LA, LA to Auckland, then from the Auckland leg, she said, oh, I met a charming young man today on the flight.
Oh, and that's right.
And it was you. You know, so together. And then she was telling me, and so that's a small world, but no, I mean, that you and how did all that come about, Matt? Again, I know the story, but I'll let your own words. How did you get the part of Slade?
Well, so I was the summer before, I was doing some open air theatre. I was doing Romeo and Juliet, playing Romeo in that, and we were touring around all these beautiful, you know, country houses and gardens. It was really, really lovely summer. And on the back of that, got a new agent. And then on the back of that, they mentioned, you know, about, you know, they put me forward for auditions for this character Slade in the Tribe. And I'd never done, TV before, especially at not that level. But I think for me, you know, having just lost mum, I had this sense of, I don't know, I guess fearlessness, a sense of actually, you know, I'm just going to live each moment and just go for it. I was still obviously deeply grieving, but as a very early, you know, young 20-year-old, you don't really acknowledge that. So I remember going into the audition for Slade, and I just felt this sense of, you know what, I know I'm meant to be here in this room, and I really... reading the script, I just felt a real connection to this character who was, you know, very much in a way a lost soul. You know, Slade, you're looking at going, well, what's his motives? What's his objective? You know, whose side is he on? Who, you know, what's his story? And, you know, for me, Slade was this lost soul who was searching and looking. And obviously it becomes clear what he's searching for. So straight away, I felt this connection and I felt this fearlessness. I think I felt like in that audition room, this part is mine. And universe, right now, you owe me one. There was a sense of that. But and then obviously I know that, you know, kind of when you saw the tapes, you know. I think you recognize something and I owe so much to you, Ray, for championing me, because I know it was, you know, you played the defining part in my story, and you gave me that life-changing opportunity that meant at a moment when my life had kind of imploded, I was able to then, you know, a couple of months later, be in the most beautiful country I'd ever been in, surrounded by an incredible group of people that became a family, and I was able to have a purpose and a goal and a focus. So when it comes to that, Ray, I honestly can't thank you enough, you know.
That's very sweet of you to say, Matt, and I have to say that I recall the day very well, where, you know, we had a lot of people audition for the part.
Yeah.
And it took about 3 seconds where I saw it and I thought, that's Slade. And it's weird. You know, where there is, you know, I mean, spiritually, I don't know what it is. I mean, I think there's a realm that possibly we don't understand. It's, I mean, we can call it instinct or intuition, but
yeah.
In that, when I saw it and I thought, oh, there's a connection. And yeah. I thought you have to come to New Zealand. And you did, I have to say, you did a tremendous job and were a joy and to work with. And I'd work with you again in a heartbeat, Matt. And what did your dad say when you went back and said, hey, Dad, I got the part?
I just remember really, really clearly, because I was a little at the time, I think, you know, I was aware that I would be, you know, leaving my dad and literally going to the other side of the world. And he was obviously, you know, Dad had been married to Mum for 30 years. So, he was, you know, grieving hugely. And I remember I went to see him and we opened a bottle of nice wine, and dad loved his wine, and we sat down and we had a glass together, and I told him the news, and he just raised his glass and we toasted each other, and he said, well, you know, your mum would be so proud, as am I. And it was really powerful. So I know I went there with his blessing and I agree, Ray. I think there is a dimension that we don't know about, and I think, you know, I don't have a religious faith per se myself, but I'm very aware that, you know, I have this sense that, you know, I kind of carry my mum with me, and I very much felt that, you know, I don't know, I felt she was able to know what I was doing there. So I felt a great deal of strength throughout the filming.
I profoundly believe that, Matt, I really do. I mean, I think your mum walks with you every day, and my mum, my late mother, my dad sadly passed away, but love transcends death. I love a dad, and I love them. And it's a different incarnation. I mean, I can speak with them, you can speak with your mum. And so going through that grieving process to realize that, you know, you never stop. My mother and father, your mum and your mother and your father, bless them, it'll be with you forever, really. Now, Matt, some of the questions that you've, you know, as a dad, we again share some similar, you know, through our families with autism and on the autistic spectrum. And your lovely son, Zach, who is now 10 years old, has struggled in the early years of his life. And indeed, you and your lovely wife, as parents, have gone through very difficult times of late, haven't you? I mean, would you feel comfortable to maybe chat about that?
Yeah, of course, right, absolutely. Yeah, so Zach is on the profound end of the spectrum. So for Zach, his autism means that he needs one-to-one care 24/7. He's 10. He's a very strong, very physical boy. So he has no sense of danger whatsoever. But is incredibly strong and incredibly fast. He has something also called Pika syndrome. So basically for Zach, everything goes in his mouth. So if you're in the garden, be it soil, snails, earth, everything. He's like a toddler who has that curiosity, you know, everything goes in the mouth. So Zach needs, you need to keep your eyes on Zach the whole time. Zach's autism is the side of autism that often, you know, in my experience, we don't hear about a huge amount. It's not that story is not told often within the media, because it's often, you know, a very harsh reality. It's always been my role as his dad to be able to help give Zach his voice, because he has snatches of language, but he's fairly nonverbal. So it's my job to fight for him, my job to be his advocate, and, you know, make sure that his story is told. And you know, we know many, many parents who are in similar situations, whose children just often fall through the cracks, don't get the care that they receive, don't get the funding by the local authority to be able to have what they need. And I think, you know, when we became parents and Zach was our first, in our heads, we had a plan of how it would all play out. And then obviously, you know, you have your plans and then life has different plans. And it's definitely taken me, you know, the last decade to, you know, deal with that struggle with guilt that I feel as a parent, that I'm letting him down, I'm not giving him what he needs. Moments of great frustration, moments of great anger, not necessarily towards him, but towards the world. And I've been on a huge journey to try and find peace with that, and really just accept Zach for who he is and the soul that he is. And I spent the last year in therapy, and actually, again, for me, it was life-changing, Ray, being able to, for the first time in my life, and being a bit of an alpha male who keeps things bottled up and has a bit of a, you know, you've got to be strong driver at times, to be able to sit and talk for about a year, once a week to somebody who just really listened. And through that process, I've accepted that Zach is who Zach is. And the now we are at a stage where we have fought to get Zach residential care, and he is in an incredible place in the UK called Prior's Court, which has 50 acres of land and swimming pool and one-to-one round-the-clock carers, who are just these men and women who have just such capacity for patience, for strength, for sharing knowledge and nourishing, and who are going, wow, we are never ever going to give up on knowing that there's so much potential there with Zach. So I feel much more peace now, Ray, that actually Zach is, you know, in a place where he needs to be, and he comes back with us every weekend and during the holidays, and he's getting what he needs and the sensory input that he needs. But it was a struggle, Ray. We had to fight and fight and fight with literally every single hour of the day to get the place allocated and the funding allocated. And it is a sorry situation that so many families of children with special needs and on the severe end of the spectrum, they do not get the care they need. They do not get the provisions. And we're able to shout quite loud, and there are some people that can't. I just want to give so much strength and encouragement to anybody that is listening that might be a parent or a sibling in a similar situation, that, you know, it sounds very cliche, but do not give up on fighting the fight that, you know, your child needs, but also, you know, never to to give up on your child, which I at times
lovely, you know, Matt, and very thank you for opening, and I know our listeners will be find that very moving and very inspiring. And I was saying to Matt, I mean, Matt will be aware, my wife and I set up a charity called the Cloud Nine Children's Foundation, where we work a lot with families in similar predicaments to Matt. And it is, it's a hard, I mean, love is an interesting emotion. And when you love,
yeah,
isn't it really? I mean, it's a four letter word, you know, but you know, when you think about it, that when, you know, the minute a child is born or when you fall in love, and we've always talked about it, where somebody's happiness becomes central to your own, where you can't be happy unless Zach is happy. And that's, you know, I talked about A.J. Penn and the novels about this as well. And we featured that theme where, you know, that love is, you know, for myself, I've got a young son. My youngest son is on the autistic spectrum, and his happiness, I mean, my happiness is dependent on him. I can't be happy unless, you know, he's happy.
Absolutely. And like you say, love is so complex, isn't it? And I think, you know, it's that moment of, you know, absolutely, I completely relate. You know, if the kids are all right, then I'm all right. And because it is, it's like, I think some described it as, it's like your heart walking around in the world, you know, on legs. You know, that's what, you know, that's absolutely what it's like. And I very much, yeah, you mentioned about, you know, AJ, you know, and what I loved in particular, you know, about the AJ Penn books is just that love seemed to be such an overriding theme, especially with, you know, the story of, you know, kind of Slade's progression in that narrative, you know, that actually.
Enjoy the books, man.
Yeah, very, very much. I mean, I think, you know, to be able to have that wonderful, that, you know, that the story continues, and that, you know, these characters, you know, still continue. And for Slade, I mean, I loved the direction, you know, that his character goes in. I mean, I'm sure I'm not giving any spoilers away, because I'm sure most people listening to this have avidly read, devoured the books, but you know it really becomes love for Slade, doesn't it? You know, love of Ruby and when he gets saved,
and then
becoming a father himself, and you get this sense that this character who's been on a quest right from episode one, where we see him just arrive and see Ram on the bike, and he's on a quest, and that's his mission to rescue, yeah, Josh, and then to have it ending with actually him, yeah, wounded, yeah, but saved by love, saved by the love of Ruby, and then a father himself. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, at some point, Matt, it's interesting, just through these podcasts, that we've had a lot of our listeners saying, are there audiobooks? And so far, there haven't been. But, you know, I've had a couple of the casts, and I'd love to do, and I think you've got a voice, so you've got a lovely voice. I find it very calming. I have to say, I've always thought that you did a voiceover for one of our early promos, and
that's right. Yeah,
have you done any of that kind of stuff? You do voiceover work, if not, you should.
Well, thank you so much, Ray. I mean, gosh, I'd love to, absolutely love to do some audiobook stuff with you guys, especially with the tribe stories. It's so dear and so close to me. I do a lot of voiceover, which I really love, from you know, sometimes like online e-learning stuff to audiobooks, to kids' toys as well. So my wife Suzanne is a brilliant voiceover artist, and we at one stage a few years ago, we both found ourselves doing voiceovers for competing toy companies. So you know, within the house there'd be a birthday cake that one of the kids would be playing with that has Suzanne's voice when you blow out the candle, and then there's a toolkit that has my voice. And you slowly notice the two of us start to try and, you know, push the other toy out the way. No. You want to play with this one? No. This one's much better.
So Suzanne's in the business, and she's enjoying motherhood, obviously, the difficulties, she will have mirrored your struggles with natural. And the two girls now, the Zach sisters, they're doing well.
Oh, yeah, they're great, Ray. Yeah, so, yeah, Georgia, who's seven, and just a real creative spirit. Really, for her, I think it's music, which is just she hears a song once and that is it. She'll remember it. She started writing her own songs as well. I accompany her very quietly in the background on guitar or piano, and she just comes up with these lyrics and vocal melodies. It's such a strong musical spirit. And Run Roses too, and yeah. She's really owning being a two-year-old. Wow. I mean, from the sweetest little craziest thing to just, she's like Jack-Jack from The Incredibles, you know, where where Jack-Jack goes crazy. And so, but she's absolutely brilliant. And yeah, Suzanne is, I mean, she's an absolute rock. Just a very strong, beautiful woman who's, yeah, completely open about, you know, the struggles that she's had, you know, and I think my wife has helped and encouraged so many other people and mums and women in similar situations by being so open. And yeah, we're a good team. We're a very good team.
I think that the way you speak is so wonderful, and it's, you know, I mean, it's a testament to the tremendous man you are and your spirit to be able to speak and, you know, to touch other people. And I'm sure for Suzanne as well, I think it's important to do that. And if you can even touch one person, it's worth it. And now, Matt, I bet all the Tribe fans are going to get mad at me for saying you. I love to connect, and we'll be doing this again. Hopefully,
absolutely,
on the Suzanne, and next time I'm in England, or we'll have to get you back to this neck of the woods. But
oh, we'd love that. We'd love that. Right?
Some questions from some of the fans.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
We've got them from Facebook and a lot of email messages and lots, and so I won't be able to get to them all. But so we'll just take a selection from Instagram and our Twitter and also the email messages. But I've got one from Rita Husko. Good morning, Rita. Hi, Matt. Greetings from Finland. Slade is definitely my favorite character. I would like to ask what Slade would have done if he hadn't found Ram. That's interesting.
Oh, it's a brilliant. Yeah, hi, Rita. That's a great question. I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, Ram was the key, was the linchpin for, you know, kind of Slade's overall plan. He needed Ram to be able to then, you know, be able to use Ram to get to Mega to then try and save Mega from himself and the situation. It's a great question. I think if he hadn't found him, then I always got the sense of Slade as being incredibly resourceful. And, you know, this was his mission, I think, driven by a sense of guilt as to what happened when him and Josh were younger, and that sense that actually for Slade the whole life is just atoning for that feeling of abandoning Josh and then that sense of wanting to rescue him. So I think nothing would have stopped Slade from his quest. He'd have had to have adapted, but I sure think finding Ram was the key early on. But I don't think this is a character that would ever have given up. He'd have found another way in, as it were.
No, I agree entirely with that. I've got one from Mark James. Good morning, Mark. Was the jacket Slade had the same one the Hunger had in season two? And how many costumes were reused and remade? Now, I can answer that. Matt may not know. Yes, Mark, we, being a small indie, we'd struggle to get every dollar on the screen. So cannibalize and reuse. So I don't know for sure if that was reused. I would suspect so, because we'd always try and remake the things. But it's interesting here, Matt, Mark adds, I also acquired a similar red jacket and modelled my look on Slade's.
Wicked. Well, I tell you, I mean, nice one, Mark. I mean, that I loved that jacket. I just thought it was so, you know, when I arrived and had my first wardrobe fitting as Slade, and it was such a moment. And, you know, kind of dyed my hair black and had the extensions put in, had the tattoo put on the arm. And then that jacket came out and it just felt perfect. That bright kind of scuffed red with a black insignia, almost the tattoo on the back of it. I really loved, you know, the way that, you know, wardrobe and all those amazing crew made Slade look. It was, I felt very cool when I was playing Slade.
Oh, you look very cool. I mean, it was and Mark, you would have been a real cool dude, you know, walking around modeling your look on Slade's, I'm sure.
Absolutely. That's so awesome to hear. That's wicked.
Do you know, Matt, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I love, as I think I've mentioned in the podcast, Indigenous cultures and the way young people can express herself through piercings or jewellery or even flex. And I was always, when you came down and I was thinking, what can we do? And I thought, oh, I know, for some reason, you're the lightning bolt, you know, the lightning on the earring. Through you, I recognized in you a quiet confidence. And I mean, again, I mean, I'm not meaning it in a weird way, like, you know, the Clint Eastwood had a stillness, but a power, didn't have to speak. And I saw that in you as a human being, you know, but also through your character. So I thought, what way is this lightning bolt where you could, you know, as you say, I think that determination, you would have gone to the ends of the earth, you know, that never given up. But that power, so it was like a man of few words, you know, a man with no name. He was such a mysterious character. We found out the bounty hunter had a lot more mentions. So that's interesting.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, to play a bounty hunter as well. I mean, what kid doesn't want to play a bounty hunter? I mean, you know, growing up from, you know, watching Boba Fett to, I mean, Han Solo to, and absolutely just this idea of, you know, someone that could have a stillness. And it was a really nice, I think, challenge for me as an actor as well, to just be able to try and, you know, convey that by, you know, especially initially where, you know, Slade's story isn't overt. No one, you know, he's not explaining his motives. It's just, you know, there's a steeliness there. And I do think things like, the earring that I loved. And I remember going to get that done in Wellington went to the place and got my ear done, and it just felt absolutely, now we're cooking. And then getting the tattoo put on my arm, that beautiful wonderful tattoo that the art department put on, that then obviously I kept on during the whole shoot, because it would, you know, we touched it up every now and then, and at the end of filming, I remember when we finally removed it, it was like I had this incredible upper sleeve branding, because obviously I'd got a suntan, but that part of the tattoo was all white and it looked incredible. And since then, I think, you know, I've got a fair few tattoos now that are all kind of from that time and in homage to Slade almost. And the beauty was, it was Kaylin that did my tattoos. So there's a lovely synchronicity to that, you know.
So it's again, that's a special interconnection, and
absolutely,
Kaylin was a tremendous actor and a lovely young man. I've got one for Jess. Cheers. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning.
What was your favorite thing about the tribe? P.S. Slade was one of my favorite characters. So, what was your favorite thing about the tribe, Matt? Anything in particular?
Oh yeah, I mean, great question, Jess. Thank you. I mean, you know, so much. I mean, the character, obviously, you know, to be playing Slade, the quality of his narrative and his storyline, to have that opportunity to be filming. I mean, you know, I loved Liberty. It was such a cool set. You know, I remember every morning when we drive up in you know, into the hills and the valleys to go and shoot at Liberty. You just got this sense you were really in this town. And, you know, you'd spend a lot of time with the cast. And I just couldn't have wished for a better bunch of people to be acting with, both, you know, behind the camera, you know, from the directors I worked with to the crew, who just were just absolutely top of their game. And I was learning so much, absolutely every second of the day. And I think to be able to share screen time with, you know, people like Kaylin, you know, lots of scenes with Tom, obviously, and Fleur, and then to have friendships as well with these, you know, guys and girls off screen as well, just felt an incredible blessing, really.
Well, that's lovely. That I've got one from our Tribe TV series on YouTube. This is from Camilla. So good morning, Camilla. So sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but so Slade, in my opinion, was the most badass guy on this show.
Yeah.
How did it feel to play a character with so much charm and swagger? That's an interesting
That's a great question. Thank you. That's such a cool thing to say about Slade. Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt very, very cool to play him, you know, when I'd get the script through in advance of shooting, and I just, the way that the script was written with that kind of that Eastwood quality, that bounty hunter quality, I just, you know, it was a real pleasure to be able to say those words and those lines. But what was lovely was that at times, because Slade did have the swagger, but because he was keeping his cards really close to his chest, he was perhaps, behaving in a way that actually really upset quite a few people. Obviously, how he treats Ruby initially, towards the end of the season, especially where Ruby calls him a liar, a coward, and a cheat. The friction and that energy he has with Ebony. Slade has a lot of friction with the characters that he comes into in his orbit. So I love that side of it as well, where you actually, for all the swagger, you could start to see some of the cracks there, some of the vulnerabilities, and the fact that he just had to keep on with this mission, even if it meant along the way there was going to be some bust-ups and arguments. And that felt great, you know, to play a character who didn't need approval or didn't need to be liked. You know, there's a certain freedom with that.
I think that's an interesting insight there, Matt. And that, do you know, it's very weird that, and this might be me, because I'm on the autistic spectrum myself. Fortunately, not to the degree of Zach, but on the Asperger's side. And I didn't know until I was 50 years old, mind you. I always thought I was eccentric. But I love movement. And I love movement in nature, watching the trees or birds, whatever. But I've always observed people, Matt, and actors and actresses, and this is quite unique. I've never discussed this before, but you're a character, and I used to watch you in the rushes every day. And for the listeners, the rushes are the previous day's filming will come in, and I'd look at the rushes every day. And I used to watch your rhythms, how you walked. And so I think that our previous questioner picked up a swagger, which is, not it's a confidence as opposed to a swagger, a confidence in like walking in 4-4 time, and then sometimes in a lightning way that you'd walk in 3-4 time. Now, it's
I
very
love it. Good.
And I promise you, I mean, everybody that I meet, I watch how they walk, and I say them, and their intonations, and your voice is very rhythmic and very melodic and very, it's very, very interesting. And watching you walk, you used to bring my pulse rate down. It's weird.
And, oh, it's, right, that's...
Yeah. So it's...
That's so... That is so cool, and it's such a cool observation, because I think you know, finding the physicality of the character is a real key way in. You know, I mean, there's various ways, isn't it? You can find that character from the inside out sometimes, and then other times from the exterior to the interior. And I think, yeah, the physicality, the walk, the stillness, the moments of movement, all absolutely inform that. Often it's once I got the sense of this is how Slade moves, the force with which he moves through the world. Okay. Once I kind of unlocked that, it then felt like, you know, I could fully inhabit him. So yeah, that's just so cool to know that translated with you.
And so maybe some of the listeners, if you're ever watching The Tribe or indeed any other show, but particularly The Tribe, if you're rewatching some of the episodes, check out, because each member of cast walks in a different way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a subconscious thing. I mean, you know, and it's interesting. If you look, if you're a music fan, which we'll talk about music in a minute, but Oasis and now the two boys,
the Gallagher brothers.
Not Noel, the other one.
Liam.
Liam has a very interesting walk.
Absolutely. And even the way that he sings, you know, he kind of with the microphone at the angle and his hands behind his back and his feet splayed out. The swagger, isn't it?
And it is a swagger. It is a confidence. It's like a FU world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Absolutely, Ray. I think you're spot on, because it is like that, you know, that body language, which, you know, I do a lot of work with, you know, kind of people helping them present, or their confidence when they stand up and have to maybe deliver a speech or a presentation. And, you know, over 55% of our impact comes from our body language, you know.
Interesting, Matt, that 95% of language is nonverbal.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's the tone, isn't it? And the words play a small part, but the words land if the rest is all in sync. And I love that idea, Ray, that if you turned the sound down and watched, say, Slade move, or the way Lex moves, or, you know, or Ruby or Ebony, I love that idea, that it would all be telling the story through the physicality. I think it's a great, great point.
And again, don't mention it to Caleb. I've already had a chat with Caleb. He's up in Churchill with his polar bears and with his But Matt, you know, like his animal is a panther, again, at some point we'll have to have another chat about this, because I'm fascinated with again, in Native American kind of culture and indigenous, where they'd pick an animal and get in tune with that animal and learn from that animal. I used to watch Caleb and some of the scenes. I thought Caleb is being a panther right now.
Yeah, I could see that. That's so true.
How he'd be stalking. It's like he'd move around the set like a, and when he was interacting with Slade, it was like a, you were almost prey to him, and until he
absolutely.
It was very, very interesting. So I've got one now from Zachary Church. Good morning, Zachary.
Hey, Zachary, good name.
That's a lovely name. That's a good name.
Who
was Zachary? Who was Zach named after then, Matt?
I think we just always knew. We just loved that name. It was our one that we straight away, you know, often you have a list of names, and I know we did for the girls, but when it came to when we knew we were having a boy, it was just Zach straight off. There's something just really cool about it, quite punchy, quite punky. So it was always Zach.
Yeah, Ringo Starr's son is Zach as well.
That's right. Yeah. Great drummer himself. And he drums for Liam Gallagher, to bring it full circle. So, yeah.
And, you know, again, going for one time, I mean, the Beatles were always my inspiration and my hero. And we flew from Cannes. We were at one of these festivals and rushed to get on the plane and sat next to Ringo Starr and his wife. And I was there with my grandsons. And I thought, oh my God, it's my hero. I daren't
speak.
Wow. my grandsons were saying, hey, Grandpa, look who's there. So this is amazing. We were talking, and you know, they said, I can't believe I'm sitting next to the guy who is Thomas the Tank. You know, so there.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we got to the airport, they wanted the autograph. They wanted Thomas the Tank's autograph. And I thought, like, what are these kids? Like, what's the world coming to? I mean.
Oh, brilliant. I guess you went back and played the Beatles on heavy rotation then to show. You know,
it was the weirdest thing, because in collecting the luggage, I just couldn't speak with him. I mean, I didn't want to speak with him, but
yeah.
And he almost recognized me. It was the weirdest thing, because he had been at some of our stands, and you know, because we were working, which is another story with Britt Allcroft, who did Thomas the Tank, and something with Britt. So I mean, I was all like, you know, swaggering myself and saying, hey, Ringo knows who I am.
That is
worth. And they said, what the Beatles, you know, that's Thomas the Tank, Grandpa, you know. And
they say don't meet your heroes, don't they? But
for sure that it's so Zachary, your question, what was your process for assuming Slade's character? Were there secrets you knew the whole season long, or were you surprised when the script revealed Slade and Mega were brothers?
Oh, yeah. Well, great question. So again, I mean, I think getting into the character of Slade was, again, the physicality, as we've spoken about, getting the right movement, the walks, and then finding the stillness as well in delivering the dialogue, you know, because especially in those first few episodes, Slade's a man of few words and every word has to count. So finding a vocal rhythm for that was really key for me. And, you know, kind of things like how much eye contact is he going to give? So once I locked into that, and some of that then started to flex and adapt depending on who I was working with. But so that was my way into to the process of playing Slade, and then just obviously feeding off the energy of whichever character I was opposite and what they were giving me and within the storyline and as the actor as well. But yeah, what a twist. I mean, you know, it was amazing because I knew that Slade was on a quest, but for what and to what extent, to what end goal, I didn't know until, you know, kind of halfway through the season when, you know, obviously we got the scripts a couple of weeks before, you know, we shot. And it was an incredible moment where the reveal of Mega and Slade. And it all just kind of clicked then. I was like, of course, yeah, that's why. And retracing the steps, it was almost like, say, Chris Nolan film like Memento, where you go backwards in time and everything slotted into place. But it was an incredible moment. I think we were all quite excited. I think I was with Meryl at the time when we were looking through and that storyline got revealed. And there was just such palpable excitement. And then, yeah, next time I saw Kaelin, I was like, hey, bro, like, all right, bro. And we just knew that we were going to have loads of scenes together, which was, you know, something we were really looking forward to. And just, you know, wow, from that moment, it was just the emotional heat just got turned up. And that's where Slade, you start to see the vulnerability. And that was really exciting.
I've got another question here, Matt. So yep. This is from Linion. Linion, that's an interesting name. Linion Shabernack. Good morning, Linion. If you could play another role in the tribe, who would it be and why?
Great question. I mean, there's a lot to choose from because there are so many cool characters. I mean, so many, you know. Yeah, it might sound strange, but if we're not, you know, if we can go cross-gender, I mean, you know, a character like Ebony, I mean, you know, Meryl just played her so well. I mean, it's untouchable, but, you know, she was, her and Slade were almost like mirror images of each other with their energy and, you know, they were like these magnets that just attracted and repelled as well, and this mix of oil and water. So, I mean, her character was just astonishing. And from, you know, the other guy's point of view, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to play Lex? I mean, again, there was some lovely similarities, I think, between Lex and Slade, in the sense of, you know, people questioning their motives. You know, who are they out for? Are they just out for themselves? What's the bravado? What's the act? You know, and what's actually the vulnerability that peeks through every now and then, like, you know, the sun kind of coming out from behind the clouds. And it's interesting, like, yeah, Kay very much, it was like playing Lex like a panther. And I think for me, it was Slade was almost like the shark. You know, you have to keep on moving. If the minute he stopped, you know, he'd be in trouble. So I think, yeah, those, you know, those would be the ones I'd probably want to play first off. But I mean, you know, you could never replicate, I mean, what they did, and the way everybody inhabited their roles, they just defined them so clearly.
That's great. Well done, Matt. So I've got one now from Emily Acton. What was it like working with the Cassie sisters?
hi, Emily. Yeah. Oh, it was a joy. An absolute joy. I mean, they, what a family. I mean, you know, was so privileged to really get to know them offset as well, and just hang out. And that was just awesome. I guess the majority of my scenes were really kind of with Meryl, and we just had so much fun. I mean, there's a real twinkle with Meryl, and we would make each other giggle, make each other laugh quite a bit. And so we had to make sure we were really, really focused when the camera was rolling. But just what was lovely is this sense of, you didn't quite know where the scenes were going to go. And I mean that in a really good way, in that, like, you know, we both had obviously the essentials, like you had all your lines down, you knew your blocking, you knew where you were going. But with Meryl just feeding off each other, this sense of, you know, it was almost like chess moves, you know, with Ebony and Slade. You know, and Meryl would move you know, one piece one way, Slade would move the other, and there was a lovely energy there in those scenes. So yeah, it was a joy, absolute joy.
Great chemistry there between you. Very well. That I've got, this is, I love this name, Glittery Cucumber. That's a great
Glittery cool as.
That's a cool name. That cool, I'd like to know if he watched any of the show before he was cast, and if so, who his favorite character was. Did you watch the show before you cast Matt or not?
So no, it's really interesting. I hadn't before I was cast. Let me take it back, before I auditioned. So obviously, once, you know, kind of I knew there was an audition coming up, you know, I went and did my homework because I wanted to know about the show. And my housemate, John, who's also my bandmate in Last Picture Show, one of his great friends, was an absolute, and is a huge Tribe fan. And I remember just mentioning it in conversation to Patsy. I said, oh, I've got this audition coming up. This sounds like a really cool show called The Tribe. And her jaw literally hit the floor. She dropped, well, you know, her fork and her knife. She's like, oh my god, right. And that was it. It was just, you know, she was this, as the Tribe family and fans are, just this absolutely encyclopedic knowledge on the show. And that was it. We dive straight in, and, you know, just managed to, you know, kind of really get up to speed with what was happening and the world and the characters within it. And again, I think there's always some that, you know, grab you, think, oh, I wonder if I'll get to work with, you know, kind of with Lex, or, you know, kind of, oh, kind of Amber looks really cool, or, you know, so yeah, it was, yeah, it was like a dream come true. I think she wanted to come on the plane with me when I came out to New Zealand. And in fact, her and John did come over and join me for the last week or so in New Zealand. And they were there at the wrap party, which we had in Wellington, that beautiful sunny day, massive barbecue, everyone there with their families and friends, and such a joyous occasion. And yeah, remember, and they were there. So it felt, again, a nice full circle synchronicity.
Isn't that lovely? That I've got one here from Isabella Milne. Good morning, Isabella.
Morning, Isabella.
And there's quite a few questions here, Matt. So,
yeah.
And you've answered some of them, but it's interesting because, and again, we've gone into it, but Isabella will find your talk about Zach very interesting because she said, what is it like to live with a person who is on the spectrum that has profound autism? What I mean by that is that I understand, as I also have Asperger's as well. So Isabella can connect with us. And indeed, there's many within our tribal family. And say, Matt, it's like a family. It's like a, I've often said it's a tribe within a tribe. But
So
good on you, Isabella. And both Matt and I, I'm sure, hope you're understanding the world you inhabit. And it's not easy, but you keep going. Isabella, an interesting question from Isabella. Do you see yourself in your character Slade at all? And if so, what would you take away from it? Do you see anything in Slade, Matt, that you similarities or?
Two brilliant questions there. I mean, I think for Slade, it was definitely, I'll answer that one first. The takeaway would be that his kind of determination. You know, Slade was absolutely on this quest and he knew where he was heading and what his objective was. And he was not going to be dissuaded by anything to get there. And I really relate to that. I think, one of my strengths is determination, you know, and I know that's come through in, I think as an actor, you need that, you know, to fight for the roles that you want to you know, fight for the right decisions and choices that you make. And I think that determination has really come into play, you know, outside of my profession, you know, again, fighting for, to make sure Zach's had the care that he needs. So I think that is something I really share with Slade. And you know, there are times I do, if I'm floundering, I think, what would Slade do? Come on, tap into that. Yeah, tap into that grit. I think that grit that the character had. And I think grit's a good word because life isn't smooth. You know, life is, you know, it's messy and gritty and I think there's there's something really powerful about having that that grit. So that's something I go to. And as far as great question about living with with someone like Zach who is so profoundly impacted as we all are by his form of autism. As you know, Isabella, it's unique to every individual. And I can only speak for Zach. But what I've learned to do, probably, later rather than earlier, is to just start to really, really tap into Zach's rhythms, you know, and stop trying to get Zach to fit into a neurotypical world and go, well, this is what you're meant to do. This is what neurotypical people do. And this is what you have to do in a queue. And, you know, just realizing that's not how Zach is wired, and trying to just strip that away and see the world from Zach's eyes and, you know, what his rhythms are, what his triggers are, what matters to him, and stop trying to just control it so much. And actually, I think in the process of starting to let go of that over the last few years, we've always had a really tight bond, me and Zach, but that's, you know, made it even stronger. And I think, you know, my bond with Zach is the thing probably that I'm the proudest of in my whole life. You know,
lovely. Well done, Matt. No, I think that's, again, very moving. And thematically, it's interesting. I've been developing a screenplay, which is kind of about this. But, and it is, the theme is, you know, if you live your life trying to be what they expect you to be, you'll never be free. And you, Matt, have unlocked through your therapy, I think, a lot of guilt and a lot of pent up within. But you've also, I think Zach is now free. Okay. And and you've accepted him. And and that's a wonderful, it's okay to be. The world needs everybody, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every color, you know, black, white, yellow, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Talented, not talented, you know, everybody has a right to be here, whether or not it's clear to us why.
And
Zach has a right. And you, in accepting that you've done, which is the greatest love, and that's to, it's like Jonathan Livingston Seagull, it's acceptance and to let go.
And, it's beautiful, beautiful. But that, and yeah, absolutely. And just to get rid of the noise, Ray, as well. I think if I spend my time trying to make people live the way that I live it or the way I see it, then that's not going to work for him. So it's like that phrase, isn't it? You know, treat people the way you want to be treated. Well, I don't agree with that. I think it's like, well, because the way I want to be treated might be totally different from everybody else. It's like finding a way to treat people the way they want to be treated, which I guess is, it's empathy, isn't it? At its kind of rawest sense.
It's interesting. I think that, I think it's natural as a parent to, you know, you're doing it out of care and responsibility, and to, you want him to be secure and happy. And, but ultimately there's some things you can't change, you know, and I've got that with my own children, my grandsons, and I think that's a nice place to be, and you'll be comfortable in your skin, because you'll flourish, because you'll see Zach flourishing, and he'll be happy.
Yeah, exactly, Ray, and I think it's really, you're so right about looking at those things that you can't change. Again, well, look, actually, Zach is who he is. But what I can change are things around him that might not be helping him. So the environment I can change, the situation I can change, the way people respond to certain things, that can be changed. But, you know, us as people, you know, in that core, it's just, complete acceptance and love, you know.
I have to say that I think it's heroic. I mean, you know, for you to, and you're right, I mean, you can change, as you've done, you know, you've fought for your son and in that, and if this discussion today, I mean, it gives, you know, patience and persistence and that grit to never say die, say damned, you know, and to
Ray,
not where you start, it's where you finish, you know. I mean, things aren't easy. Patience and persistence and that determination, I mean. And it's good. I never ever give up on anything. I'm like you or Slade, you know. I'll never give up. That now I've got one from Matthew Jones. Good morning, Matthew.
Oh, hi, Matthew. He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah, Matthew is a big tribal fan within our community.
Oh,
and
he's awesome.
And Matthew, forgive me he's asking about who did you want to see Slade with, permanently Ebony or Ruby. We won't get into that because of the books and that. But Matthew is asking, any new Last Picture Show music?
Matthew, I mean, hi, Matthew. You're such a massive supporter of my music and the band, and, you know, it means so much to us. So thank you to you and to all the, you know, the Tribe family that have really supported and followed the music side of things as well. It's so deeply appreciated. You know, between the band members, we've got about 5 kids. So time is always seems to be against us to be able to do as much music as we like. If we could, in an ideal world, we would just release music the whole time. But we have got a song that we wrote many years ago, actually, that we then kind of revamped, redusted off. And in the light of once the Brexit decision came out over here, that was something that obviously stirred up a lot within this country, and the song took on a new life with new lyrics, the lyrics of which focused on don't let the division pull us under, don't lose sight of the joy and wonder, there's more that unites us than divides us. And it became like a rallying cry, so the song became called Joy and Wonder. And we recorded it last year in a beautiful studio, gave it a full on big sound, big treatment. Then John, the guitarist in the band and the co-founder of the band, is a absolute genius when it comes to directing and filming, cinematography and artistry. I think a lot of the Tribe family know of John's work. And he filmed a short film to go with the song. And we're planning to release that later on in the year, or at a time when it feels appropriate, actually, given the climate. There might come a time when actually, you know, it feels right and euphoric to release that. But it's all in the can. It's just having its final edit. So, Matthew, there will be a big, big single coming out imminently. We're just waiting for the right moment to get it out there.
You should excuse me, let us know, Matt, when that's released, and we'll advise the fans. We'll, through our social media, through the Facebook and Twitter and that. And Matt,
that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome, Ray. Thank you.
And with John Williams, who's a tremendous talent and a lovely man.
Wow. The maestro, absolute legend. Legend.
He's a terrific, terrific producer. And John's always been a big fan of the Tribe. And we were speaking just the other day, actually, and he's actually had a number one album, I think, the last couple of weeks. I think it was the House, whoever did, whatever it is. I mean, I can't remember the name of the band, but he, you know, he's keen to do more Tribe music, and we must get, you know, do some Tribe music, and so that's something we need to.
Yeah, Ray, would love to. Absolutely love to do that, because, you know, music's just always been such an outlet for me alongside my acting, and you know, it's especially over the last 10 years, you know, releasing music with Last Picture Show, and also I've got a side project called Dissembler, and I did an album a couple of years ago, and they tend to be my piano based songs that I write and then just release and get out there. And but writing, you know, for a show, you know, kind of more soundtrack style, is absolutely something we'd be absolutely dead keen to do more of, for sure. Let's do that, right?
Do you do music every day, Matt? Do you,
when I can. At the moment, I am very much, and also because Georgia is so into music, and Zach really loves music, Rosie as well. So there's always music going on in the house, be it, you know, Pearl Jam playing on the record player, or we've got a piano upstairs, you know, and it's hard to walk past there without playing. And at the moment, I'm feeling a lot of stuff I'm writing at the moment, and is coming out through songs. So, you know, I wrote a song called Under the Blue last week, which was all about, you know, the state the planet's in at the moment from a, you know, planet point of view, the blue skies, the lack of vapor trails, and, you know, the Earth itself, how it's doing at the moment. And just recorded that. And the beauty of, you know, social media now is you can record it and upload it, as so many people are. And it's just, you know, through Facebook, or I'm going to get a YouTube channel going with that. And then you can just share it with the world. And, you know, if it brings a comfort or you know, enjoyment to one person, you know, then job done. You know,
I think that's wonderful. And no, and I love it. I applaud anybody creative, and anybody that can give birth to music or songs or fill blank pages for books or scripts or stories or wear their heart on the sleeve and acting, whatever it is. The arts, I think, is lovely, and I respect and admire it so very much. I think it's terrific. All ages, and as you say, Matt, it doesn't matter if you're selling a million copies or one copy or no copies, or, you know, I do music every day, and sometimes I'm the only one that hears it.
Well, it's its own reward, isn't it, Ray? What are you doing at the moment? What kind of stuff are you doing?
Do you know, I mean, it sounds very grandiose. I mean, I'm doing a symphony for the Vervines, you know.
And wow.
Yeah,
awesome.
So I was very thrilled to do the Spirit Symphony that was performed by, and that's kind of mind-blowing, you know, when you hear 130-piece orchestra. And I'm a terrible procrastinator. I've been writing this damn thing for a long time. And
and
always, I don't know if it's a fear of success or a fear of failure, or, you know, I'm often saying to my family, they're all very creative as well. And
yeah,
I don't know what it is, but yeah, I sometimes and other music. I mean, I just, you know, hear it in my head, and sometimes I think, well, I must get that down. And and the years pass and I never do it. But I
need
a reason to do it, you know. And so you know, John is John Williams. I think that's a reason to do it because I like working with lovely people. And John is not only talented, but he's a tremendous human being, a very special man. And so maybe, you know, maybe we can get some tribal music to our tribal fandom there. I think they'd enjoy it. And
that would be absolutely awesome, Ray. In a heartbeat, would love to be involved.
So look at, maybe I'm going to be checking out some of these audio books and I know Caleb and Merrill and some of the other cats would like to do some readings, but so we'll see what's possible. You never know.
Fabulous. Oh, that sounds great, Ray. It sounds
like time has just flown by and I really appreciate you today taking this time on behalf of your tribal fans around the world. And in closing, is there any message you'd like to give to them at this particular time?
I mean, Ray, just first of all, thank you for this. It's been such an honor and just so great to reconnect with you, you know, and just with the tribe family. I just want to thank everyone out there for their loyalty and, you know, it was life changing for me being involved in such a cool show and the fans throughout all the years from, you know, being at Dragon Con to just through social media through have just really helped enrich and change my life for the better. And I'm incredibly humbled and grateful and thankful to you all. And I would just go back to what I said at the beginning, which is just two things. It's okay right now to not be okay and just to be kind to yourself and just to keep breathing. I know it sounds so simple, but you know, sometimes when we're under stress and in the world at the moment, we realize we've held our breath and actually just to breathe really deeply. Breathe in, breathe out. I know it sounds so simple, but it's the key to it all. And we're all in this together, you know.
Lovely advice, Matt, and I agree and endorse that. And I'd as well just like to send my love as well as Matt's to all of you out there in the tribal fandom. And I really know you'd like to join me in thanking Matt for taking the time. It's a two-way thing, Matt. I mean, support is a two-way thing, and that's lovely. It's very special and a testament to you as a human being and all our cast that you take the time to give something back. And that's really because it mirrors the tribal fans who are so loyal and supportive. And I wouldn't feel right not doing this. So it's a great joy for me to chat with all the, I love it. That's why I could speak with you for the next 5 hours, you know.
But, yeah, I know.
It's like a family. I mean, you don't need to see each other daily, but when we connect, it is like a family. You just pick up from yesterday. So Matt, you take care and lots of love to Suzanne and to your lovely family, to Zach and the two girls there. And you stay safe and look after yourself. And we'll be in touch and we'll catch up very, very soon. It's lovely to speak with you, my friend. I really appreciate the time. And as we say, keep the dream alive, eh?
Always, Ray. Keep the dream alive. Bless you, my friend. Thank you so much.
That's all right, Matt. We'll be in touch. Take care. Lots of love.
Cheers, Ray. Thanks.